prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. It is a new week, and we have lots of great shows this week. You can go to our program guide on the website, superhumanradio.com, to see what's in store for this week. Today's show, we're going to be talking about two different topics. During the first hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Simone Gill to talk about arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. Then, during the second hour, we'll be joined by Dr. Adele Height and Dr. Pamela Schoenfeld to talk about calling out the USDA and Department of Health Services on the creation of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for America. So we have great topics today. You're not going to want to miss a minute. And if you can't listen to the whole show live, you know you can always find the podcast at superhumanradio.com or anywhere you can download a podcast, iTunes, podcast.net, Stitcher, and so on and so forth. Remember, Superhuman Radio is made possible through a special grant from All American EFX and their parent company, All American Pharmaceuticals. You can go to superhumanradio.com and click one of the banner ads to learn more about them. So let's get started. Dr. Simone Gill, welcome to Superhuman Radio. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. And this is really an important discussion. And when I first learned we were doing this interview, I couldn't help hearken back to the first time I read The Story of the Human Body by Dr. Daniel Lieberman, when he talks about our trajectory through evolution, the most profound thing that we did. It wasn't our brain, folks. It was becoming bipeds. And one of the unique things that had to happen over thousands and thousands and thousands of years in order for us to be successful bipeds was we developed an arch. And that arch contributed to the geometry of the hips and the way our knees worked and everything upstream from it. So when we talk about obesity-related walking limitations, what we're really talking about is also an aspect of disevolution. We are yet changing some of the evolutionary gifts that we've been given over 4.6 million years. So let's talk about your research first, please, Dr. Gill. Talk about your study. How was it designed? What was the goal of the study?
Well, my colleagues, Dr. Lewis, Dr. De Silva, and I conducted a study to look at this relationship between the height of the foot arch in adults and how that relates to walking. And in particular, we wanted to look at how body mass index, or BMI, was related to that relationship. And in this paper, we talk about sort of two parts of the study. The major part of the study actually took place at the Boston Museum of Science. My colleagues and I brought our equipment there, and we recruited participants there to take part in our walking study. So we took measures of the ways in which they walked, so the timing and distance of their walking patterns, and then we took a measure of how high their arches were. We also measured their body mass index. And then we did some analyses to look at the relationship between those measures of walking and arch height according to BMI. And we found that those who had BMIs that were in the obese range tended to have flatter arches or flatter feet. And that for those who had BMIs that were higher, that this relationship between the arch and walking was suggestive of ways of walking that meant that they needed to increase stability.
Mm-hmm.
So they tended to walk more slowly and spend more time with both feet on the ground. And in general, obesity is related to those walking patterns, and those are based on studies that other colleagues as well as myself have established. But what we didn't know, which is what this study told us about, was how does obesity relate to the structure of the foot in terms of these walking characteristics that require you to increase stability and also predispose these individuals to safety risks.
Okay. So I want to get deep into this because this is really intriguing to me. But did you find, like any of these types of studies where we're looking at patterns in small or large populations, there's with the rule and against the rule type phenomenon. Did you find any against the rule type phenomenons here where you had a person who was clearly a 30 and above BMI, but yet they had very, very high arches?
So that's a very good question. There is variability in arch height among individuals, even within BMI categories. So one of the things that we did find in our study was that, in particular, for people who had BMIs that were in the overweight range, that if they had a flat arch, that their walking patterns tended to be more suggestive of needing to increase stability, like walking more slowly and spending more time with their feet on the ground. Whereas if those with overweight BMIs had higher arches, they tended not to display those kinds of walking patterns. So it really looks like that it's this relationship between the BMI, how BMI relates to the relationship between arch height and walking.
Right.
That is what matters. So, yeah, that's a great question.
Well, and the reason I ask that is because in preparation for, I happen to know that I am considered obese on the BMI chart.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm roughly about 15% body fat right now. I'm 233 to 234 pounds at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm hypermuscular, and I have a very, very high arch. And so when I read the paper, I looked at my own arches, and I thought, I wonder if there's more to this than when we look at individuals, there are so many different categories of individuals. There are the hypermuscular person whose BMI is high. It's not the same as an obese person. And there's a lot of phenotypical attributes that don't line up, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yes, that's why I asked.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. No, that's also another great point that you're bringing up. So BMI is often used in many studies to categorize individuals into these different weight classifications. Ideally, it would be great to use sophisticated measures to be able to assess body fat.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you, having run all of the participants along with my colleagues, that the individuals that we ran in the study were very characteristic of the typical population.
Gotcha.
So these were not individuals who were very athletic and happened to have a larger mass because of a lot of muscle.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's what I figured.
That's a fair question, though.
And this is really a double-edged sword, because if an individual is obese and they get the message they must be more active, along with controlling their diet, they have to become more active. It's very hard to be active. I found this out after I smashed my toes a couple times. It's hard to be active when your feet aren't working right. This kind of contributes. It's almost a double-edged sword. If they have this problem where they are not only obese, but they have this arch relationship, that actually could tend to pretty much damn them to a more difficult time of ridding themselves of body fat.
Yes, and you know, that is how I began my interest in this research in the first place. My background is in examining the development of walking across the lifespan, and I started to wonder about, well, you know, what if it's difficult for you to walk? And I began to look at some of the work on obesity and the very suggestions that you're talking about to increase physical activity. But in my work, I began to realize that people who have BMIs that are higher have difficulties walking, so it makes it more difficult to participate in physical activity without hurting yourself. And in addition, these findings are suggesting that, yes, the structure of your foot also may play a role. And so, you know, part of what might be helpful or what this work might suggest is that, well, maybe we need to support those with higher BMIs to be more active, and maybe one of those ways is by providing arch support if they happen to have lower arches.
Well, and
that would need to be studied.
That's an interesting, and I wanted to save that for a little later in the discussion, but that's an interesting idea And there's an emerging camp out there that's saying part of the problem with the arch today is, in fact, the arch support provided in mitten-style shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we can investigate that more and kind of see how that plays in. But I've got lots of questions. I promise everybody that's listening, it's going to be a lively discussion. And if you are a personal trainer, which I know a lot of personal trainers listen to this show, this is important to you. Because quite often the person that's coming to you is looking to lose body fat. They're not looking at health. They're looking at body fat, unfortunately. But you can give them the gift of both of those. But you have to take into consideration, realistically, what they can do and what they can achieve. And this plays into the discussion because we live on our feet. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Freakish muscle gains, Freak Maker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline, and medium-chain triglycerides. A 2-to-1 carb-to-protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast-absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cree alkaline pH-buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad. The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today. New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex is finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function, and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex. Just because your water is clear doesn't mean it's pure. You can't see the most harmful things in your water. Tap, bottle, it's all the same. Plasticizer, chlorine, fluoride. Today's water is horrible. The clearly filtered water bottle will purify up to 100 gallons of tap, bottle, river, or stream water. And it removes chlorine, fluoride, other harmful chemicals, and bacteria while saving you a load of money. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the clearly filtered banner ad and save 5% plus free shipping inside the USA.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. We're talking this hour with Dr. Simone Gill about arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. I don't want to get into the whole arch support just yet. I want to kind of amble down this road slowly and kind of see if we can investigate every aspect of this. So these patterns, these walking patterns, some of them could be a result of tissue leverage. As a result of having much thicker thighs, people have to walk with their feet splayed quite often, which disengages the hamstrings, which can contribute to stability issues from another angle. Walking splayed all the time puts uneven wear on the inner and outer part of the knees, the ankles, and so on and so forth. How much of this is all arch, and how much of it is a combination of changing the geometry? I mean, evolution caused the geometry of our hips to change. Where our hips used to, hip bones used to be flat, let's say, where our legs splayed out like chimpanzees do when they walk, you know, we kind of moved them in, and so we could walk forward, engaging the hamstrings. And how much of this is arch, and how much of this is now we're using the legs in a geometrical fashion they were never designed to be used in?
Well, I think that the arch contributes to all of the things that you're describing, but it isn't solely the arch. And I'm sure that we also all know that one change in the body has a domino effect. A change in arch structure can influence the knees, which then can influence the hip. So when someone has an aspect of their bodies that causes them to move in a different way, there are these compensatory mechanisms that people put into place that cause them to move differently. So just as you're saying, when there's more adipose tissue on the thighs and the legs are farther apart, then people tend to walk with their feet farther apart because that's sort of an aspect of maintaining stability, and also turning the toes more outward, which is a part of what we also see in the study. And those are patterns actually that are characteristic of trying to maintain stability, not only in adults with higher BMIs, but also is related to work that I did many years ago with children who first begin to walk. They actually tend to walk in similar ways, and on the other end of the spectrum, older adults walk that way also if they have physical limitations. So all of these compensatory ways in which people not decide to walk, but tend to walk if there is something different about the body does lead to injury, as you're saying.
Do we have any evidence or research that points to the amount of change in the arch as a person progresses up the scale of body weight? Do we have people that we have baseline arch height when they were, you know, at a certain age, and then again 20 years later when they were heavier, and we see the change?
There are some, there are only a few studies which have looked at changes in arch height in children over time longitudinally, but I would love to do the very study that you're talking about and be able to look at how the arch height might change, not only as a function of growth, but also changes in BMI over time. That has not yet been done, and I think that's a piece of the puzzle that we need to understand. How does arch height change developmentally, but then how does it change when there are different stresses on the body?
Because I just had a thought, you know, we see culturally or cultural adaptations that are actually causing the change in gait. We see, like for instance, not to pick on the sagging pants group, but we know that the sagging pants people have to walk with their legs splayed, or their pants will slide down. So they have to create this this pressure at the lower, at the upper thigh, outer upper thigh, to hold the pants in place. So they walk with their legs out, their feet out, and so I'm wondering if in fact this type of a gait, which could be also related to an arch issue when you're young, actually contributes to the progression of obesity. A person who doesn't feel stable probably doesn't do a lot of active things and tends to be a little bit more sedentary. And even when they are active, maybe slow moving. And maybe this actually helps in a small group of people actually perpetuates the obesity problem for them.
Yes, I think that that is the case. And with other studies that I've done, I've examined how people with varying BMIs perform functional tasks, like crossing over obstacles of different heights, for example. And what I'm finding is that both children and adults who have higher BMIs tend to do those tasks in different ways than we would. So, for example, a child or an adult who has a higher BMI, instead of stepping straight over an obstacle, might lean forward and sling their leg over, which, you know, creates instability. So they might, in the short term, be able to cross the obstacle without falling, but still do it in a way that predisposes them to an injury. So you could imagine how that might translate to doing some sort of sport or physical activity. They might be less likely to be able to do that in a way that feels safe to them. So if you are athletic, then you'd be able to catch yourself or perform a task in a way that's not going to predispose you to hurting yourself. But if you have a higher BMI, you already move in ways that make it more difficult for you to be safe. So you're less likely to want to be physically active.
The change in gait and the change in foot position. So let's go back to the splayed foot kind of duck walk for a second. That puts an uneven tread pattern on the foot from the ball of the foot to across this to the side of the outer side. We also see these same people, they tend to stand on the outside of their feet. They roll, you know, if you look at their shoe wear, it's worn more on the outside than on the inside. How much of that then contributes to the decline in arch height because you're using the foot in a way that it wasn't designed to be used?
Right. That could contribute to wear and tear, particularly depending on static versus dynamic posture. So static, if someone is standing in place a lot, and depending on where they're putting pressure on the foot, that could determine wear and tear. Also, in terms of how they position their feet when they walk dynamically, that could also contribute to wear and tear. But these are questions that we really would need to examine with more research, and that's a part of what we're also arguing in our study, is that we need to really delve deeper into these questions, because studies that have so far been done on obesity are really important and have established a lot of the physiological harmful effects that obesity has. But we still don't know a whole lot about how obesity influences movement, which is so closely tied to the ability to be physically active and lose weight or maintain weight loss.
Obese people tend to have neuromuscular issues below the knee. We know this. These could be these could be from vascular changes. These could be from neuropathic neuropathies. This could just be from the load bearing effect on the soleus muscle and the and various muscles of the instep, and these muscles tend to become stiff, rigid, or non-responsive over time. Is this a contributing factor to the whole arch height dilemma?
You know, I think that it could be a contributing factor in terms of the relationship between arch height and walking. Because as you're talking, I'm thinking of research that's being done right now that shows that even muscle quality differs among people with different BMI. So if someone has a higher BMI, they may have decreased muscle strength, but it's because the quality of the muscle isn't the same. So there's more adipose tissue and sort of connective tissue inside of the muscle instead of actual healthy muscle tissue. And that, my understanding is that over time that can be reversed or improved with exercise. But that is something else that we're really seeing, is that these differences in muscle strength are due to actual physiological changes in muscle quality.
And but it takes, fat deposits in muscle, in large muscle groups, the back muscles, the quadricep muscles, this happens relatively early I'm a former 330-pound person. I mean, I was obese up until the time I was 40 years old. But the infiltration into smaller muscles, like the muscles of the instep, for instance, this takes longer to occur, and it takes longer to reverse as well. But you're right. The fatty infiltration of muscles changes not only contractile force of the muscle, but the geometry of how the muscle is pulling. So it impairs in a lot of different ways. I want to go ahead and take this next break a minute and a half early, because when I come back, I want to talk about shoes for a second. There's a large group of people now that are saying, and this has evolved as a result of maybe the whole five finger phenomenon, you know, that everybody's wearing five. I've been wearing five fingers since they came out, 7 years now. And I noticed some things when I started to transition to them that make me question if our shoes aren't contributing. I'm not saying that our shoes are making people flat-footed, but what I am saying is that if you are a person who's challenged, let's say you're obese, these arches may be doing more harm than good. I want to postulate this question and see what you think of this. We're talking right now with Dr. Simone Gill. We're talking about arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support, to weight management, to nervous system support, to detox and cleansing, and more. Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get two bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic raw EVOO for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Simone Gill. We're talking about arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. And there clearly is... There's a linkage between obesity and arch height, but there's also some indication that obese people that have falling arch height, if you will, may be more challenged than obese people who don't. So what role do shoes play in all of this, Dr. Gill?
Well, you know, that is a good question. And we know that some do argue that there are differences in walking in populations that wear shoes, like many of us who are shod versus those who don't. And before the break, you were talking about the five-finger shoes.
Yeah.
And the movement that some people have made, particularly with running, in wearing those. And I think that the thought was that being barefoot is naturally how we were meant to get around, and that the closer we got to that, that the better things would be. Now, because we are all very accustomed to wearing shoes, you know, doing something different is sort of like a perturbation, so then you need to adapt to this new sort of situation. So although, you know, our ancestors did not wear shoes, we now do. And so I know that when people tend to switch to the five-finger shoes, they need to adapt.
Right.
So, you know, people switched to those because they felt that it would offset the instance of shin splints. But running with those types of shoes then changes the way in which you run. So if you don't train up and then become accustomed to running in those, you actually wind up injuring your calf instead, which it sounds like you may have experienced.
Well, yeah. So two things. When I first started wearing, I'm trying to think when it was. It was probably 2008 or 2009. It's right when the five fingers came out. I actually had the director of marketing on the radio show, and she sent me a pair. And I slipped them on, and I started wearing them. And she warned me during the interview. She said, you got to go easy, wear them for an hour a day, and then slowly increase from there. Mm-hmm. And I did notice that the muscles in my arches hurt me when I started wearing them for 5 and 6 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
But like any muscle, progressive overload causes the muscle to supercompensate. Supercompensation mm-hmm. makes the muscle stronger. And it steps up to the job. And so over time, I was able to wear five fingers around the clock. But then I started to run in them. And what I learned quickly was you cannot heel strike run in them. You must
That's
run
right.
on the balls of your feet.
Yes.
But that's the way sprinters really run anyway. If you look at sprint, when I was a kid in high school, they had running shoes back then before the running shoes of today with the big mm-hmm. heel. Running shoes were made by a company called Spalding. You all know who mm-hmm. they are. And they had no heel because the idea was track stars ran on the balls of their foot. They pawed or clawed the earth. They didn't heel strike the earth, and that's how they were fast. So mm-hmm. I just started adapting to running that way, and everything was fine. And I will say that when I first started running with five fingers on, I did pull my calf muscles a couple times, but just like everything else, you have to go easy. And next thing you know, I was able to run for very long distances that way using my five fingers. But then another challenge came. So I decided to, I had always done heavy farmer's walks. Are you familiar with what those are, Dr. Gill?
No, I've never heard of that.
All right, a farmer's walk is something that they do in strongman competitions. It's when you grab a heavy weight in each hand, mm-hmm. like a farmer would hold two buckets or two bales of straw, and you walk with
yes.
them.
Yes, I can envision what you mean, yes.
Okay, so then I started doing heavy farmer's walks, and I always had worn a traditional cross-training shoe with a nice thick padded heel, and I started doing those in five fingers, and my goodness, my arches hurt so bad they woke me up in the middle of the night. But then after I recovered, I went a little easier, and lo and behold, once again, my arch strength increased because I was now loading the foot with such weight, not just my body weight, but an additional 150 to 200 pounds sometimes, and my arches got used to it, and now they're fine. So my point is this. My arches responded to the progression of work and load the same way my body has responded to the progression of work and load when I first couldn't squat 225 pounds all the way up to when I squatted 500 pounds. Mm-hmm. So it seems to me that there may be some truth to the fact that traditional mitten shoes with a high arch give those muscles a vacation. Because the arch is keeping the arch, the sole or the inner shoe is keeping the arch up, and this leads to atrophy and even maybe some level of sarcopenia in those muscles.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, for sure, when you're wearing those five-finger shoes, you are asking your arches to do some heavy-duty work. So I think that it depends on what the goal is. If the goal is to help someone who has a very high BMI to lose weight because they are at health risk, then the immediate goal might not be to introduce a shoe like that where you want to really work on the arch support right away.
Agreed.
But, you know, it could be that then as you make sure that you, you know, establish that this person is getting healthy and that they're going to really be able to exercise for a longer term, then I think that it could be appropriate to introduce something like that where you say, okay, now let's work on the actual structure that supports you and make sure that that helps to sustain you long term in exercising. I think that I would be concerned about someone who has a higher BMI starting out immediately with that. It's sort of almost like, you know, putting someone on a bike for the first time with no training wheel.
Yeah, I agree.
I guess the analogy I could think of.
Yeah, I agree. I agree completely. That makes perfect sense. What role do the toes play in arch height? I notice people who have, I don't know what the medical term is for hammer toes, but people who have hammer toes typically have hyper high arches. And they almost have a lack of stability in the foot because of this hyper arch and the hammer toes. Do the toes have an effect on the arch, or is that just a separate condition, a separate issue, has nothing to do with this?
Well, you know, I think that it depends on how people walk. When we conducted our study and we took a measure of arch height, we used a special digital mat which gave us a digital footprint. So when someone stepped on it, we could see the pressure that they exerted onto their feet as they walked. And essentially, because it's a footprint, you'd think it would look exactly like their feet. But some people walk so that their toes barely touch the mat, so maybe just the first three toes or so, the big toe and the other two might touch. And others might have the imprint of all of their feet on there. So I think that this brings up the point of looking at people's arches statically versus dynamically. Mm-hmm. So sometimes in lots of studies, arch height has been examined as people are standing, and then extrapolations have been made about how that might have something to do with function. But I think that I would argue that it's really important to look at it dynamically in motion, because that's the only way to really know how someone actually uses their arch.
Right.
So it could be that the toes are related, but I don't think that that would be the case for everyone.
Was there anything that really surprised you about this research when it was all said and done? Did you go, I didn't expect that?
You know, I think that the thing that was most surprising to me is that the main crux of our findings were that, so we had these three different groups, individuals whose BMI fell into the normal weight, overweight, or obese categories. And for those whose BMI fell into the overweight category, that was really where we saw this relationship between arch height and walking based on BMI. And so we expected that we would find that with individuals who had the highest group of BMIs. But I think that what that says to me is that we need to also pay attention to this other group that I think is a bit understudied, those who are at risk, most at risk of going into the obese category is, you know, the group of people whose BMIs are overweight. So I think finding that relationship really highlighted the sense that we need to figure out not only how to help people who already have obese BMIs, but how to help prevent people getting into that situation.
Did you did these subjects were they ever asked any qualitative questions about how they felt about their own stability? And if so, did those comments play into what you found in true instability issues?
So we didn't formally ask questions about instability, but participants were really interested in talking about lots of different aspects of their feet and their walking. There were some people who came and said, well, I really am interested in looking at what my feet look like because I feel like I've always had flat arches and I've had trouble with that. Or, you know, people have always said I've had, you know, a different kind of walk, and so I'm interested in knowing more about that. We did ask people about the incidence of foot injuries and so on, but we didn't formally look at the relationship or how those mediated these specific things that we examined. My sense is that the group that we studied weren't affected enough by those different things
for it
to really play a role in our study, but I think that definitely there's you know, something to be said for the history of injuries and so on that that could play a role in the relationship between walking and arch height.
Interesting. We're going to take our last commercial break. We're talking right now with Dr. Simone Gill about arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. The health and performance benefits of phytonutrients are indisputable, but getting all of your phytonutrients from your diet is difficult. That's why Prime Nutrition introduced Phytoform. Phytoform has nearly 11 grams of all the micronized veggies, fruits, fiber, minerals, and antioxidants you need. Alfalfa, organic spirulina, and chlorella, plus acai, pomegranate, goji, bilberry, blueberry, raspberry, cranberry, and papaya. Cabbage, spinach, broccoli, beet, the list goes on and on. You won't find a better, more complete fruits and greens blend anywhere. It even includes PQQ, which has been shown to improve mitochondrial biogenesis. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Prime Nutrition banner ad today and use coupon code SHR to save 30% off. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing. Your physique is carved from sweat, reps, and discipline. It's time to show off your hard work with Quest Apparel. Clothes engineered to enhance the contours of your body. The makers of the number one selling Quest Bar created Quest Apparel with your body and philosophy in mind. Every shirt, pant, and dress has an inspirational custom tagline as a reminder to yourself and a subtle message to those around you that you carved your path to be the exception because you are made, not born. Go to questapparel.com and enter code SUPERHUMAN to receive 20% off your purchase today.
Just because your water is clear doesn't mean it's pure. You can't see the most harmful things in your water. Tap, bottle, it's all the same. Plasticizer, or chlorine, fluoride. Today's water is horrible. The clearly filtered water bottle will purify up to 100 gallons of tap, bottle, river, or stream water. And it removes chlorine, fluoride, other harmful chemicals, and bacteria while saving you a load of money. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the clearly filtered banner ad and save 5% plus free shipping inside the USA.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Simone Gill about the relationship between arch height and obesity-related walking limitations. Last week we learned in an interview that most physicians don't talk to their overweight or obese patients, even after they've identified them as overweight or obese, about their obesity problem. Very, very, very small number of physicians actually notate it in their folders. So for those who do take notice of their overweight and obese patients, what can they learn? What can they learn from this research that will help them counsel or understand better the challenges of these individuals when they say, look, you got to be more active?
That's an interesting question. And also interesting that you're talking about that finding. You had mentioned earlier that you yourself had a higher BMI. I also did, and I can say I'm 5'2", and at one point I was 225 pounds at my heaviest. So I was in the position where I would go to the physician for a checkup or what have you, and I knew about my BMI, and the physician would almost never bring it up. I would have to be the person to bring that up. So I think that the first thing to do is to acknowledge that, and also to have physicians say to clients that, you know, based on this research, that there is a particular reason that that moving is more difficult for you. It isn't because, you know, I think that there's a stigma that needs to be overcome, that people with, you know, higher BMIs are lazy. You know, that isn't the case. There's actually a reason that it's more difficult to be active when you have a higher BMI. So I think that, you know, that's definitely one takeaway, to acknowledge that there's work out there that shows that if someone has a higher BMI, that they move differently, which makes it more difficult to be active. And second, that we need to think about whether there are ways that we can support increased physical activity, whether that means a temporary support to the arch, if that's helpful, with, you know, then weaning someone off of that and taking it away to actually work on the strength of the arch to improve that relationship between arch height and walking. But I think acknowledging that there are ways of moving that that are related to obesity that predispose these individuals to tripping and safety risks is something that I think I would hope that physicians and other health professionals would take away from this work.
You know, I was just thinking to myself that there are people out there who are tired of being overweight or obese, and they make decisions that they're going to push through the pain of anything to reach their goal. We don't even see them talking about this on shows like The Biggest Losers. You know, I mean, these people are struggling to do this work, but in the meantime, they could be damaging their arches forever if they don't maybe go get fitted for. I almost feel like if you are obese, one of the things you should do, aside from buying a pair of tennis shoes and a sweatsuit, is to maybe invest in some orthotics. What do you think about that?
I think that could be helpful. I think that in consultation with a health professional that could be helpful, because maybe there are particular orthotics that would be useful depending on how flat someone's arches are, or, you know, whether they need to be tailored specifically to that individual. But I think it's possible that could be helpful, particularly when starting up an exercise regimen. If it's already more difficult for someone to move because of the ways in which they move, then if we can boost and facilitate weight loss, then I think that is that would be really helpful.
Yeah, because I think that if your feet hurt, you're not going to be any good at anything. I mean, you're not going to get up and go to the gym. You're not going to walk around the neighborhood. And even if you say, oh, I'm going to push through the pain, you're going to do that for a short period of time, and then you're going to be injured. And that injury could be devastating. It may not be something that just heals by staying off your feet. I mean, you could probably do some. What's the bone called? The navicular bone? That's
navicular.
I mean, I remember when I was a kid, I didn't break the navicular bone, but I broke. I had a fracture in the bone to. It was my left foot. And it was the bone to the left, so the outer portion of the foot. I guess there's some other bones in that area. And I had to wear one of those little canvas and wooden shoes when I was a kid. That really made me popular, by the way, in parochial school. I had one shoe on and then that wooden thing. But anyway, you know, you can actually break the bones in your feet. And they're not easy to set. A lot of times when you break bones in your feet, they just kind of knit where they are. And that's it.
Yeah, and that definitely would affect arch height, particularly the navicular bone, and then could lead to compensatory ways of walking, which again could lead to injury.
Yeah, this is an important discussion. I don't think people give it enough thought, because we don't think about our feet at all. We beat our feet to death,
right?
And we expect to get up every morning and just keep on moving. And this is something that physicians need to address with those physicians who are not what's the word I'm looking for? Censored by political correctness, and care enough about their patients to say, you know, you really need to do something about your weight. They also need to say, and in this new lifestyle journey, you need to take into consideration that your feet are not prepared for you to walk 5 miles a day at 350 pounds.
Right. I think that is the case. And I think that, you know, foot health is something that isn't paid attention to a whole lot until something goes wrong. And once something goes wrong, it becomes very difficult to rehabilitate that, because we need our feet to get around.
Yeah, we just take it for granted. I mean, when I smashed my toes, I got a really good lesson about how hard it is to live life with feet that I smashed. I broke two toes on my left foot and one toe on my right foot at the same time. I dropped a 50-pound weight on each of them.
Wow.
And I can tell you that having both feet being injured at the same time gave me a great appreciation for my feet, because it really changed everything. Everything I did, I had to take into consideration my feet, what I was going to do. You know, is it going to hurt when I do this? Am I going to be able to walk there? So it really is something that we take for granted. I think it's an important discussion. What's next for you? I know you said you're trying to do some more research. What will the next study look like?
Well, the next research that I'm really looking at right now is in examining, you know, I mentioned that those who have higher BMIs tend to move differently. I think that is partially due to musculoskeletal issues and biomechanics, but I also think that there are neurological aspects of movement that are different for those who have higher BMIs, whether it's for metabolic reasons. So I'm starting a series of studies with a colleague where we're going to look at whether there are differences in fMRI measures mm-hmm. with those who have higher BMIs and whether that has some relationship between how they walk and what we're finding in fMRI. And in particular, I'm interested in looking at how massive weight loss through bariatric surgery influences movement and whether that shows some kind of change in those cognitive measures and whether interventions can be done to improve movement and cognition even after massive weight loss. Because the research is showing that even after massive weight loss, that individuals are still at a fall risk. So it's not solely decreasing body mass.
Well, and that's because not enough emphasis is put on the contribution of muscle in the etiology right. of all diseases, but especially in this particular situation.
Right.
I mean, we right. have to, when we look at, and you know, that's interesting because in people who have gastric bypass surgery, we can see a rapid decrease in weight in a relatively short period of time. So it's easy mm-hmm. to follow them and watch yes. what happens to their arches. You'll have yes. to control for people whose hips are already degenerated because they right. walk in a fashion to protect from hip pain.
That
would be really, really interesting. And that would then further the discussion about the importance of getting people who undergo that type of rapid weight loss due to surgical interventions to start focusing on adding muscle back into the mix.
Yes, and I think that that could be another population of folks who, you know, there's a heightened attention when they are actually undergoing the surgery, but we need to follow them afterwards and make sure that we help them increase muscle and move in safe ways to maintain that that level of health, because it isn't solely about just losing the muscle, the body mass.
I see that, you know, this morning, it's funny. Just this morning, Elisa and I were watching the Today Show doing cardio, mm-hmm. and she said to me, you know, Al Roker walks odd. I said, yeah, because he has degenerated hips from when he was obese. Mm. And so, you know, that's an example of somebody who's undergone a lot of weight loss but still carries the signature walking style that he developed while he was obese.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is interesting.
Yeah, and also those who have obese BMIs also have a really high risk of knee osteoarthritis, and you know, many have very advanced knee osteoarthritis, mm-hmm. so they move differently because of the pain in their knees,
mm-hmm.
And so that's going to really influence their ability to stay healthy even after bariatric surgery.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It could be that there's an improvement after surgery, but you know, we don't know how far gone the knee osteoarthritis is and how much it would improve after weight loss.
Thanks for being on the show, Dr. Gill.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, a lot of fun. Take care.
You too.
All right, so there you have it. Very important discussion, especially those who are personal trainers and you're working with people who are overweight and obese. Take into consideration their feet. Maybe even suggest that they get professional opinion about being fitted with orthotics to make their progress easier. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, an interview that I've wanted to do for a long time. Two scientists calling out the USDA and DHHS on the creation of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. They're singing to the choir, but it's going to be a beautiful song. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The biggest role in strength and fatigue. The ergogenic effects of caffeine are a result of this fact. There's a new player that can give you greater confidence, clarity, and concentration that will translate to better performance in or out of the gym. Mindset from Haleo. Mindset was tested by the University of Tampa against caffeine and a placebo, and it outperformed them hands down. A stimulant-free pre-workout formula that's as effective as caffeine without the unwanted side effects. Get Mindset today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link in the Carl Recommend area. Mindset, the smart edge.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Do you want freakish muscle gains? Freakmaker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline, and medium-chain triglycerides. A 2-to-1 carb-to-protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freakmaker Build delivers 58 grams of fast-absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cre-alkaline pH-buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freakmaker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. AgeForce has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex is finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex.
Your physique is carved from sweat, reps, and discipline. It's time to show off your hard work with Quest Apparel. Clothes engineered to enhance the contours of your body. The makers of the number one selling Quest Bar created Quest Apparel with your body and philosophy in mind. Every shirt, pant, and dress has an inspirational custom tagline as a reminder to yourself and a subtle message to those around you that you carve your path to be the exception because you are made, not born. Go to QuestApparel.com. Enter code SUPERHUMAN to receive 20% off your purchase today.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Look, brother, there's a new groove. There's a new thing. Gets down to the nitty gritty. Yeah, that's it.
Welcome back. Remember, Superhuman Radio is made possible through a special grant from All American EFX and their parent company, All American Pharmaceuticals. You can go to superhumanradio.com to learn more about them. I love this next interview. I love it for two reasons. Not just because of the topic we're going to be discussing, but because of the two people delivering the message. Calling out the USDA and DHHS on the creation of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans, we have Pamela Schoenfeld. How you doing, Pamela?
I'm doing great.
And Adele Height. How are you, Adele?
I'm doing well. Glad to be here.
The reason I'm so excited to have you two on was I originally thought that you were both scientists, you know, doing this kind of research, and but you are from a more unlikely group to be doing this discussion, and I applaud you up front. I want to say this. I applaud you for your courage and for your honesty, because you're both registered dietitians, right?
Yes.
So most registered dietitians, I actually I argue with them because they toe the line. When they get out of school, they don't apply critical thinking. They just follow the agenda. But that is not what either of you have done. So first I have to ask, and I'll direct first to each of you, Adele, have you been ostracized by colleagues for what we're about to talk about?
I have to be very honest and tell you that I've gotten more pushback from scientists who, especially those in nutrition epidemiology, than I have from dietitians. And in fact, the North Carolina, I'm located in North Carolina, the North Carolina Dietetics Association has asked me to come and speak to their group.
That's a refreshing. So, I didn't know that. Okay, Pamela, do you think the reason that a lot of dietitians may not speak about this, they recognize it, but they're afraid of possibly losing credibility or credentials?
Well, I'm not sure they fully recognize this. It's a difficult thing unless you've spent the time really looking into it. But a lot of it is just because they're working in a healthcare system that wouldn't really allow them to do these type of things. However, we know that there are a number of dietitians, especially working with adults, that are not following the party line because they know other ways of helping people that work more effectively. I work with a lot of children, and I'm finding that it's almost the last bastion of holding on to these dietary guidelines, even in the face of them not working.
Right.
With the children, because the pediatricians are relatively conservative in the care of their patients. But there is a lot of dietitians that are much more open-minded, and then there's, of course, a very smaller subset that would really embrace the ancestral-type diet, you know, to its full degree and be able to use that.
Oh, God bless you for saying those words. We've been talking about ancestral diets on the show since 2005. I can't believe that you said that. That's amazing. You're going to become the patron saint of registered dietitians someday.
Okay. I'll wait.
Okay. I'm writing to the Pope right after the show.
Okay.
So this was an open letter, right? This was an open letter that you sent to the USDA and Department of Health and Human Services?
Yes.
Did you address it directly to Dr. Margaret Hamburg?
Tom Vilsack is the one at the USDA.
Department of Health and Human Services is under the
Sylvia
FDA.
Burwell.
I mean, it runs the FDA. I'm sorry. I got the chain of command wrong there. You sent it to Tom Vilsack.
And it is confusing. Who governs what with regards to our national food policy and guidelines is, it's a labyrinth. So it's understandable that you're confused.
Did you get a response from good old Tom Vilsack?
No.
I didn't. That doesn't surprise me.
We're still working at it.
Well, what works better, I've found, than trying to get government, unfortunately, whether you believe government is corrupt or inept, the truth is that neither of those are acceptable for these types of agencies. It's more important to get this message to people because people vote with their dollars regardless of what these agencies do or say. And so we still have hope, even if the government doesn't respond.
When you say people vote with their dollars, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics is well aware of this. And, in fact, there's some recent programs they've developed to help dietitians grab more of those dollars because dietitians are somewhat stuck in the past, and I think the public is, although they respect dietitians in most cases, there's a lot of options out there for nutrition care and nutrition information, and to remain relevant, we need to be up with the current information. So the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, our professional association, is looking at that and trying to help us capture those that new way of thinking that people are more looking at what's been going on that hasn't been working. We want to find out what works.
Okay, I want to read this bulleted list from your paper, okay? Because it really is, it's great, and it's undeniable. And how anyone at a government level can ignore this makes me question their ethics. The current recommendations have contributed to the increase of chronic disease, widening the health divide between minority and white Americans, are not compatible with adequate essential nutrition, do not reflect the biological, socioeconomic, or cultural diversity of Americans, are based on weak, limited, and inconclusive scientific data, as is the RDA for vitamins and minerals, and have explained their and have expanded their purpose to issue beyond their original mandate while failing to provide clear nutritional guidance to the general public. I applaud you. You've said the words that many of us who've been paying attention understand. But the government doesn't care, unfortunately. They don't.
You want to address that, Adele?
Please.
I think they do. I think some people actually do care, but Adele will explain, I think, a little better on that. She's more the policy person.
We have a huge... we have a massive machine of practices and programs that are based on the foundational theories behind these guidelines, National Cholesterol Education Program, and all of these other programs and practices that are meant to do things like lower blood pressure by reducing sodium and lowering heart disease by reducing saturated fat and reducing weight by reducing calories. And while none of these practices are bad in and of themselves, as an approach to public health, they simply haven't worked because we're all too different.
Right.
But those institutionalized programs and practices, there's a lot of money behind them. And it's not just food industry money. It's that's not all. It's scientific money. It's grant money.
Right.
It's positions and power.
And it goes where it's worse than that. I actually have said this numerous times on the show over the years, and I've actually had one of those little memes that went around Facebook. And I said that industry and government are like conjoined twins who share a heart. And in order to separate them, you have to make a decision that which one of them is going to die. And neither of them plans on dying anytime soon. So part of the problem with nutritional recommendations today is they pander to the economic side of food production. We have three major crops that are highly subsidized by this government that are at the core of many conditions, diseases, and even part of the obesogenic model. But the government refuses to speak truthfully about it because they need to get their money out of these crops before people stop eating them. So, I mean, it's a mess. And the unfortunate part is the people who are suffering are the people of this country. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to pick it up on the other side. We're talking right now with Adele Hite and Pamela Schoenfeld about an open letter questioning the USDA and DHHS on the creation of the 2015 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Really, it's just, well... Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com. Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Live On Labs.
You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. Keto Force is the first ketone salt that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Force and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Force banner ad today. Do you want freakish muscle gains? Freak Maker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline and medium chain triglycerides, a 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast absorption carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of crealkaline pH buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
New from the makers of Mass Pro Synthogen, Progenidrex. It's finally available to everyone. Refined for years in elite athletes, it's the absolute pinnacle of products specifically designed to accelerate drug-free muscle growth without hormones. Using Progenidrex as directed results in dramatic increases in muscle size, pumps, and recovery from heavy training. Won't disrupt endocrine function and no need to cycle off. Visit PredatorNutrition.com and Fusion Supplements for the absolute last word in non-hormonal anabolics. Progenidrex.
You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the AgeForce Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. AgeForce has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AgeForce banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
You know, I've been talking about CanSee eye drops since I started doing this show. And recently a guest on the show, Michael Mooney, who is the guy behind Super Nutrition, the Life Extension Project. He overheard the commercial during the break and went out and got himself some. He wrote it in his blog a couple weeks ago that after just 1 week, his near vision improved by almost a half of a diopter when he went to the eye doctor. This stuff really works. If you're older and you're starting to reach for reading glasses, CanSee eye drops can improve the flexibility and ability of the crystalline lens to flex in a more youthful fashion and get you closer to what you are reading without glasses. Check it out, CanSee eye drops. Okay, so when we went into the break, we were talking with Adele Height and Pamela Schoenfeld about their open letter to the USDA and Department of Health and Human Services about the problem with the current, and really, one of you speak to this. How much has the 2015 recommendations changed from 2014 and 2013? Whoever wants to grab that.
So the guidelines change every 5 years, but in all reality, the guidelines haven't changed in 35 years. The first guidelines that we got, or the guidance that we got from the federal government, is essentially the same 35 years later. So that tells you how much they're keeping up with the science and keeping up with the health outcomes that have resulted from their guidance.
How much of a problem this is this for those who are more socioeconomically challenged?
Well, I would say that's probably the group that's affected most adversely by it because they have the least amount of access to resources, and including the professionals they see to give them advice are more likely to be in line with the USDA and the conventional dietary recommendations. I actually happen to work with a variety of wide range of socioeconomic groups because I actually am an insurance participating provider, so I see all sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do see is that the especially the ethnic groups, they have a different they've had a different way of eating in the past, at least according to their, you know, I'll interview the mother and ask what, you know, what they grandmother fed, you know, her, for example, and they've had that in the past, and now they're all following with USDA guidance because they truly believe that's right, and a lot of their traditional foods are not being eaten anymore. So it's really a travesty, and I don't really think that there's any person that really wants people to be harmed by it. It's just, as you said, Carl, a huge machine that's really spun out of control in this country.
What diseases are being contributed to? I mean, diabetes is on the rise. I always find it humorous that they have diabetes cookbooks, and you know what's on the cover? Cake, pastries, and pasta.
It's well, like, you can have your cake and eat it too, right?
Well, yeah, but you know what?
I'm kidding.
I know that. I've even said on the show, type 2 diabetes, those who suffer from it, not type 1, where the pancreas has failed, you need to start thinking of yourself as carbohydrate intolerant. If you were lactose intolerant, would you continue to want to drink milk? Of course not. Until you get your diabetes under control, you should be limiting these types of starchy foods that spike blood sugar and hence put a load on the pancreas. I always find it humorous that those books have nothing but pastries and cake on the cover of them.
The problem with that guidance and the reason that I think it doesn't get utilized or promoted is that it's very scary to tell people to reduce their carbohydrate because then they might start eating animal products and dangerous, scary, saturated fat.
Oh, heavens forbid. You know, my grandmother used to have a jar on the back of the stove that she used to take the grease from whatever she cooked and keep it. And then she would go in there and she would scoop a spoon or two of it and throw it in her skillet and cook again with it. You know, those people ate eggs cooked in lard. They ate foods flavored with tallow. They ate bacon, and they didn't have cholesterol problems back then.
Well, if they did, it didn't harm their health. Well, most of them didn't even know what their cholesterol was.
Yes.
And in fact, my grandfather was in the same situation. I remember when I was, I'm 57 now. I remember when I was going through my undergraduate years and they were teaching us all the appropriate diets at the time, you know, the low fat, low cholesterol. I said to my grandfather, you know, what are you doing? You can't cook like that. And, you know, he lived till the mid 90s. So, you know, apparently he knew what he was doing a
yes.
lot more than I did at that time.
And cholesterol has been unlinked to all the things that they're linking it to. And that's why statin drug manufacturers are trying to repurpose these drugs as anti-inflammatory drugs now, but that's a whole nother story. Okay, so
yeah, and interesting. Speaking though of the statin drugs, the Academy of Nutrition Dietetics has just actually in one of their recent issue has just stated that the diet. And I'm going to read this if you don't mind.
Please.
Data to support. Despite the documented influence of saturated fat on surrogate disease markers, the effect of saturated fat intake on diseased endpoints is not clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're
starting to get the message because I think it's because the practicing RDs are going to be dinosaurs if they don't change.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna tell you something even better. If the practicing RDs get the message that you two have gotten, they will be the physicians of the future because you won't get sick if you eat right. You know, if you ask 10 people of this culture today, and I'm 56, so I'm with you on this. If you ask 10 people of this culture, how many of you expect to get some chronic disease at some point in your life after 50? They'll all raise their hands. But you know what? My grandfather lived to be in his 90s. My grandmother was almost 90. My great-grandparents lived into their 80s and 90s. These people, they came from other cultures. They came from other countries, on my side, Italy. But they ate what they knew worked for them for thousands of years. They didn't adapt to these new diets. These chronic diseases that we have today are all linked to the food, aren't they?
Oh, I would say a lot of them are. There's been many changes in the environment, you know, between the pollution, the electromagnetic fields, the light that we're exposed to, disruption of circadian rhythms, you know, lack of
rest,
different types of movement. You know,
mm-hmm.
people will argue with that. But I do think the basis of building a healthy body is the food you eat, because obviously every cell of your body is made from the food you eat. So you can't make good, healthy operating cells without having all the nutrients that those cells need to function. And that's what I think Nadell and I are really emphasizing, that we need to focus on essential nutrition.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, I can't believe the things that you're talking about. I've always felt that registered dietitians didn't get it, and they were lockstep with the mission of teaching people to eat the foods that the medical orthodoxy and the big machine wanted them to eat. I can't believe you're talking about circadian rhythms and EMF and RF pollution. I mean, these are all, you're right, it's a perfect storm. We can't say it's just diet, but clearly diet contributes to a great degree of some of the diseases we see today, including Alzheimer's disease and so on. I want to take this next break early, because I want to come back and talk about the whole lack of essential nutrition, because most people today will say, oh, you don't have to supplement. If you're eating, you know, a varied diet, you're getting everything you need. Then there's another camp out there that says, hey, the food we're growing today isn't the food of yesteryear. You have to supplement. I want to get your opinions on this. We're talking right now with Adele Height and Pamela Schoenfeld. We're talking about an open letter that they sent to our good buddy, Tom Vilsack. Tom actually reads his mail when he's not jetting around the country on Monsanto's jet, you know. So I'm sure he'll get to this letter pretty soon. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
One-two punch for muscle growth is increased pump and increased intensity. Research shows metabolic changes occur that yield bigger, stronger muscles. Harness the power of agmatine plus carnosine beta-alanine to give your workout the intensity, pump, and metabolic changes that you'll not only feel but be able to see. Go to superhumanradio.com and use the coupon code SHR to get Prime Nutrition's Ultimate Stack and save 30% off. That's a savings of over $12. Get the most out of your next training session with Prime Nutrition's Nitric Oxide Plus Intensity Stack. Prime Nutrition, the best or nothing.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Do you want freakish muscle gains? Freak Maker Build from AAEFX. It's a scientifically engineered post-workout formula that combines protolan, whey isolate, whey concentrate, milk isolate, casein and egg, quality protein sources with carbolin, free alkaline and medium chain triglycerides, a 2-to-1 carb to protein ratio to optimize post-training recovery and repair. Freak Maker Build delivers 58 grams of fast-absorbing carbolin to replenish glycogen stores and 1.5 grams of Cre-alkaline pH-buffered creatine monohydrate. Get Freak Maker Build today. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the AAEFX banner ad.
In today's day and age, it's refreshing to find a company with values that match yours. And it's even more extraordinary when the products they make exceed your expectation in every way. That's what Michael's Naturopathic Programs has done for over 30 years. With more than 50 tried and truthful high-potency formulas, Michael's Naturopathic Programs give your body what it needs. No more guessing what herb or vitamin, amino acid, or mineral you need. With Michael's, it's all in one bottle. From cardiovascular support to weight management to nervous system support to detox and cleansing and more, Michael's Naturopathic Programs work. They have to. Michael himself has been giving it to his own family from the very start. You can find Michael's product at your local health food store or go to michaelshealth.com and get your tried and truthful formulation. That's michaelshealth.com. Anabolicminds.com.
Anabolicminds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit Anabolicminds.com today and get into the action. Anabolicminds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
Imagine if there was an organic, raw, extra virgin olive oil made from one-of-a-kind olives found in Sicily. And wouldn't it be amazing if the producer cared so much about the quality that they tested every batch for the important things that should be present in olive oil? Well, now there is. It's Papa Vince. For a limited time, you can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince 100% imported from Italy, organic, raw, EVOO, for $39. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the link and call recommends. Taste and feel the difference. Papa Vince since 1935.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. Last year, we had Vettina Feo from Papa Vince on the show, talking about she was on her way to Sicily for the harvest. And the end of this year, they ran out of olive oil. Well, guess what? This past harvest fruits are now available. 600 bottles are on their way from Sicily and more behind it. If you want to try the single best olive oil in the world, it tastes like no other olive oil in the world. You have to get Papa Vince. And right now, those who follow the show can get 2 bottles of Papa Vince for $39.95. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Papa Vince banner ad today. All right, so when we left off, we were talking with my two favorite dietitians, I must say. I have to say that up front. Really, I'm being sincere about this. I mean, you guys are really right in lockstep with this audience. Adele Height and Pamela Schoenfeld, and we're talking about. So what about this notion that the food of yesteryear provided more nutrient-dense value than today and vitamins and minerals and all that sort of stuff? You think that's hogwash, or you think that's playing a role here as well?
Pam, do you want to take that?
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a role in that. excuse me. But, you know, that's one of these things that we'll, in my opinion, we won't really be able to know. What we do know, in my, you know, again, this is my opinion, is that the foods that we are eliminating because we've been scared away from them, such as egg yolks, liver, things like that, are providing essential nutrients that has been documented. In fact, there was a study out just recently that we're not getting enough of, such as vitamin A. I'm a big vitamin A proponent.
Oh, me too.
I think vitamin D has got its moment in the sun, and vitamin A is kind of like in the eclipse or the shadow of vitamin D. And I think it's really bad. I mean, I'm pretty aware of Chris Masterjohn's work. I've known him for about 12, 15 years.
Yeah.
And he shed so much light on those interrelationships. And modern medicine, they all think the vitamin D is great. All the doctors test their patients for vitamin D now. They put them on high-dose vitamin D. And when I say to my patients, you know, I'm not really sure that's the right thing for you, I always send them Chris's article on Beyond Good and Evil. But the doctors, they know a little bit. And as I say to, you know, people, this is kind of one of my favorite expressions. I know you've heard it. A little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Right. Right.
And so now I think we're seeing a vitamin A deficiency because not only is beta-carotene difficult for most people to convert to vitamin A, they, you know, at the same time, they're not consuming foods that are naturally rich in vitamin A because we've actually lost our taste for those foods.
Well, it's interesting. Chris has actually been a guest on the show several times, but I met him through Sally Fallon Morell over at Weston A. Price Foundation. If you look back at some of Weston A. Price, his work, and then also the work of Francis Pottinger. Mm-hmm. You know, Francis Pottinger was the one who discovered the importance of vitamin A, at least in the cats that he worked with. Mm-hmm. The cats that were getting high doses of vitamin A in their diet, natural real vitamin A in their diet, had uniform, beautiful kittens. All the kittens looked exactly the same. They had the same patterns and so on. And the cats that weren't getting enough vitamin A, they had motley-looking, mutt-looking kittens. Everyone looked like it came from a different mother. And we've learned that stem cell research depends on vitamin A for stem cell differentiation. If you don't have enough vitamin A in your body, those stem cells that you have that are designed to repair things, they're not going to be able to repair anything.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting what you said about reproduction. A couple reasons. One, I see a number of pregnant women, and you'd be shocked at what the vitamins have in them. Most popular vitamin for obstetrics for pregnant women has 1,000 international units of vitamin A, 1,000 as beta carotene only.
Yeah,
and they're all giving the pregnant women the vitamin D, and I'm appalled at it, and yet I have to be careful because the upper limit of vitamin A is so low that pregnant women ask me, "Oh, is that safe? Is that safe?" Now listen, when you get a patient that's saying, "Is that safe?" they've got a red flag in their mind. Okay, that dietitian told me to take extra vitamin A. What do you think that person's going to do if they have a child that has a birth defect?
Yeah, of course.
Who are they going to go after?
No, I agree. I was just going to say, and the artificially low upper limits of vitamin A scare people off of vitamin A. I take 8,000 IUs of vitamin A a day, and there's been periods in my life where I've taken as much as 20 to 30,000 IUs in a day. And
no problem as long as your vitamin D is adequate. But the thing is,
yes.
You think, I hesitate. I can't even help pregnant women for fear of being sued.
Yeah, no, I know.
I can't do it on a one-on-one basis way.
I know.
It's ridiculous. In fact, a study just came out today. They were studying vitamin A in mice, and it says, well, the upshot of the study is that there's a loss of beta cells if mice don't have enough vitamin A through dietary inadequacy, or they've got these specially bred mice.
Transgenic.
It's like this vitamin A thing is huge, and I don't know when we're going to realize it.
Well,
and it was something our ancestors knew. And on top of that, I'm just going to get off my soapbox for 1 second. But the USDA, I did some research for another project, and they knew in the 1940s and 50s, they wanted every child to have homogenized milk. And you know why? They wanted every child to get the same amount of fat in the milk because that is where the vitamin A is. That is what their literature said.
Mm.
Okay? And now they don't even care about those vitamins anymore. They just want to make sure you don't get too much dairy fat because erroneously they believe dairy fat is the enemy, and when actually it's beneficial for children for their waist size.
The other problem that comes into effect here in these discussions is many of our foods have been adulterated. Milk is no longer what it used to be. I am a proponent of raw and pasteurized milk.
And I agree. I used to be on the Garden State raw milk. I used to head it.
There you go. But milk on the shelf today is to me, it's like roadkill. It's like picking up a possum and cooking it when you get home. You don't know how long it's been dead. You don't know anything about it. Milk today is really not even a food unless it's raw, unpasteurized milk. Then it's in its natural form. But the other issue that is not being discussed is how we have change these foods, and it's actually the foods that we've changed that are causing the diseases. It's not their original. I mean, look, I love liver. I love liver.
Foods,
yeah,
right?
I love liver, but I get my liver from cows that live a natural life. I would not eat a liver from a cow raised in a CAFO.
You know, I appreciate that, and I'm the same way. We both are in a position that we can do that. You have to understand, though, it's better to eat liver from an animal that's raised in a feedlot and get the vitamin A. This is my belief. Maybe it's not true, but when I'm working with Hispanic populations, I'm not going to be able to tell them, oh, you need to drive over to Pennsylvania or become part of this underground food network,
right.
Which is extremely expensive.
Right.
They do not have the time to do this. Many of these families are holding two jobs. Both parents are working. You have to work with what you can work with. You can't. We'd all love everybody to drink raw milk, but it's unrealistic. So, you know, if I can get people to have raw milk cheese, ghee, good grass-fed butter, those are still going to have the vitamins in them.
And I have to add that our farming practices are not monolithic. You know, farmers will raise their cows on grain, will give their cows grain when grain is cheap, but right now grain is expensive. So even animals that are raised in more concentrated, you know, not out on pasture,
conventional,
more concentrated,
right,
areas, are still raised for a good part of their life on pasture simply because it's,
yes,
uneconomical to feed them grain their entire lives.
Yeah.
So it's not that this, I mean, this is one of the things that we've gotten into in nutrition, is that there's this big list of good foods that good people eat, and there's this big list of bad foods that bad people, or poor people who can't afford the good foods, eat. And there's really so much gray area. There really is.
Yeah, no, I agree. But these discussions are what help kind of tease out the important details, as you're pointing out. That's very true. Even a lot of the quote-unquote grass-fed beef at Whole Foods is finished on grain, but it spends most of its life eating grass. So there has to be some good value to that. Have you been on any mainstream TV or radio shows thus far?
No.
I'll let Adele answer that because
no, not yet.
on this, because we started this in 2010, actually.
Yeah.
With the first last issue. It was a kind of exciting time at that time. We had a lot of synergy going on. And Adele authored, she was the main author on a paper that really critiqued the process that was being used to develop the advisory committee report using the new sort of new way of doing things with the nutrition evidence library. That was actually something that was done with the academy's direction, you know, along with the USDA. Sorry. And we found that there was a lot of things they were overlooking, and Adele's been working tirelessly on this since then, and at the same time, you know, working on her degree or PhD.
Right.
I've been working more being a private practitioner, working in the community, trying to help people, but we're coming back again now because we're seeing the same old in 2015, which is, in fact, they're clamping down. They're even taking meat,
yeah,
out of the list of proteins. It's just getting worse instead of better.
It's
almost like, how can this direction, it's like the emperor's new clothes. They're naked. Don't you guys see that you're naked?
This is part of my argument for doing away with sovereign immunity, quite frankly. You know, you can't sue a government because of sovereign immunity. It's one of the, you know, the rules of law in the United States and probably abroad as well. Because I see a lot of culpability here. I see, like, you know, like you said, they're taking red meat out. And it's going to get worse now. So the health is going to get worse. And as health continues to get worse and worse, you know, when do we say the government has done things wrong? Government must be punished for this. Because, as I said at the beginning, whether they're corrupt or inept, neither of those is acceptable. Those are not acceptable excuses, in my humble opinion, for what's going on right now. And this manuscript that you've submitted was accepted by the Journal of Nutrition, correct?
The Nutrition, yes.
Yes. So, this means that there are a lot of learned eyes reading this paper. Where is the groundswell of people going, when is the government going to stop making recommendations that are clearly the wrong recommendations for their own personal benefits to satisfy the big companies that support political campaigns that are obviously driving these agendas of the foods that we eat? And now what's even scarier to me is our government stands to make money on health care now. We've already deciphered this. We've had a couple discussions that show that there are dollars earmarked to go back to government now through the affordable health care. Well, guess what? You don't need to raise taxes if people who are sick are paying you money and it's coming directly to the government. And the more people every day get sick, the government makes more and more money. This is a scary time right now because I don't see any incentive for our government to go, you know what, we were wrong. It's time to overhaul this. We'll talk about this when we come back. Stay tuned.
Everyone knows the importance of optimal vitamin D levels for health. Every week, a new study is released showing the linkage to disease from low levels of vitamin D. But throughout evolution, we have never gotten the massive amounts of vitamin D in our diet that we get today. This is why oral vitamin D is associated with toxicity and the risk of calcification of organs. Vitamin D is naturally synthesized in the skin, but dermatologists tell us to stay out of the sun for fear of skin damage. Now you can take your vitamin D the way nature intended it with Primal D. Primal D delivers a topical dose of
of vitamin D into the skin where it belongs. Topically applied vitamin D does not carry the risks associated with oral vitamin D. And a single bottle of Primal D should last you a year. For less than 19 cents a day, you could be taking the world's best vitamin D supplement. Go to PRIMAL-D.com to learn more. Oh, and you don't have to wait to run out of your current vitamin D to order Primal D. You can just throw it away because it just became obsolete. Primal-D.com. Vitamin D delivery the way nature intended.
Everyone knows how important staying hydrated is for your health, but have you ever thought about what's in the water you're drinking? Truth is, it's not good. Stop second guessing and get the Clearly Filter pitcher filter and drink with confidence knowing that your water is pure. Clearly filtered water filters eliminate dozens of harmful contaminants that can keep you from achieving optimal hydration and peak performance. Don't put up with mediocre water. You deserve better. Click the Superhuman Radio banner ad now and get an exclusive SHR package discount and free shipping.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides. You've already heard the hundreds of testimonials about how well the Age Force Fat Burner Patch works. Now it's even better. Age Force has added the powerful appetite suppressor, Hoodia. So now, while your body's in high gear burning fat, you'll have an easier time sticking to your diet. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today to get a buy one, get one free for a limited time. What do you have to lose other than body fat?
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with two brilliant registered dietitians. I feel very fortunate for their clients, I'll tell you that right now. And that is Adele Height and Pamela Schoenfeld. So, one other thing I want to touch on before we wrap up the interview is your assertion that the dietary guidelines have overstepped their original purpose. One of you speak to this, please.
Certainly. The original purpose of the dietary guidelines was to provide information about nutrition to the general public, and that was it. So they're, first of all, not fulfilling their original mandate in that they no longer provide information to the general public. When the dietary guidelines are developed, they're directed towards policymakers and towards healthcare providers. So the public is left to sort of wait and see what the policymakers and healthcare providers translate out of those guidelines for them. The other thing is that these guidelines are supposed to be based on all available science, and they're not. They're simply not. The USDA and the Department of Health and Human Services gather together the science that they want the scientists to look at, and the scientists look at only that science. And then to top it off, to add insult to injury, the Dietary Guidelines Committee this year has decided to look at sustainability. Not that sustainability is not important, but we're talking about a group of nutrition epidemiologists. And quite frankly, the idea of environmental sustainability and protecting the environment, these are huge, complex problems. I spent this past week traveling across Virginia with a group of people from the Virginia Forage and Grasslands Council, and they're just really terrific bunch. These are the folks who bring us our pasture-raised meat. And I saw demonstration after demonstration of how animals, especially beef cattle, are restoring the environment.
I know.
And the Dietary Guidelines Committee has said across the board that red meat is damaging to the environment. Well,
it's not true.
I'm here to tell you that's not.
I know.
We've
talked about that on the air beginning of last year. That when you if you let cows munch on grass, first of all, a lot of things happen. The type of E. coli that is the most dangerous and kills people is not found in their feces. They don't produce the amount of methane that when they eat corn and grains that they do. Plus, there's a cycle that occurs of carbon dioxide, oxygen replenishment when they eat the grass that occurs from the roots of the grass. There's just so many benefits to letting cows do what they do naturally. But you're right. There is a vegan agenda afoot. Why? Because big agra has big money. And I am all for, I got into this debate with a guy who wants me to be a vegan so badly, and I said, I eat a lot of vegetables with my beef and with my chicken and with my pork and with my salmon. I eat a lot of vegetables. I don't have to eliminate anything to be healthy except some grain. Absolutely. But
it's interesting. It'd be one thing if they could show that red meat was unhealthy for the population. We know that there's some people that probably should limit red meat, okay? And I'm not going to get into those details. But it's almost assumed that red meat is not even good for anybody.
Right.
It's simply not true. I can't tell you the number of parents that come in and tell me, oh, well, we only eat ground turkey and we don't eat red meat. And I'm like, what? What do you know, the kids, they can eat red meat. Let them eat. You know, oh, we had a hamburger the other day. You'd think that they were, you know, committing a crime. You know?
I know. But this is again the problem. You know, the other problem here, as you point out, that the DGA is supposed to provide nutritional information for Americans, but it doesn't. That falls under the what I like to call the edict. One of the edicts that government operates under today, maybe not yesteryear, but today, is that Americans are too stupid to care for themselves. So we have to distill this down to a pyramid or a plate shape to help them understand this very, very, this is scientific stuff. You guys wouldn't get it. So we're just going to make a little plate for you and tell you what you should eat. This is another issue that I take with government. We are not too stupid to care for ourselves. In fact, we can do a better job caring for ourselves than they can. And I want the government to get the heck out of my pantry, quite frankly.
Yes. I just finished writing an op-ed for examine.com that says, what if there were no dietary guidelines? You know, what apocalypse would occur?
Yeah.
You know, let me think. Would we all of a sudden have skyrocketing rates of obesity and diabetes? Well, that happened when we created the dietary guidelines.
Right.
So I can't imagine how getting rid of them would make things worse.
So what
the
do you...
The only thing that I get concerned about is that, and I'm not saying we need dietary guidelines, but that cultural wisdom that we used to rely on for our food knowledge and just, you know, how we fed our families is largely lost in this country. And it's, how are we going to get that back? I'm not sure. I'm not even sure we can.
Yeah, I don't know either. But we can't get them back with the dietary guidelines telling us how to eat.
You know, gosh, this is my, so I'm listening to this. I'm thinking, you know, why aren't you on Dr. Oz? Why aren't you on mainstream television shows getting this word out? Because basically this paper puts the finger and points it at the government for doing things incorrectly, and government will never ever accept, that responsibility that it does anything incorrectly. So the best thing that can happen is that people hear this and they start searching for answers on their own. That's the only way we're going to change anything, because as we're seeing with Monsanto now, you know, after quarter of losses, they're finally starting to look at organic farming. They're starting to look at things that people, you know, these companies will sell you what they want you to eat or they will sell you what you want to eat. The only way that they get that message is when they have to start throwing product away because no one's eating it. And they go, oh, my God, where'd the market go? We have to follow it. So these discussions have to happen in quite frankly, places of worship, especially if you're talking about socioeconomic changes, people within the socioeconomic strata of them changing. These discussions have to happen at the level of communities so that people start talking about this and they start going to the farmers market. They start exploring this. And a couple years from now, they get it and they go, oh, my God, I can't believe I'm eating red meat and eggs and I'm losing weight and feeling better than I've ever felt before. In fact, my blood sugar is down below 80 for the first time in years. And wow. And forget about government, what they think and what they don't think. We're smarter than them.
Yep. And maybe they're going back to their grandmother's cookbooks. You know, maybe we can do that. I mean, I don't think we're totally disconnected.
No. For those of us who are still alive and remember that sort of stuff, we need to pass those messages on to our children now so that they have something. Now, this is great. I think what you've done is fantastic. It took courage. It took insight and it took honesty. And I just wish that you would get more fanfare for it. I expect to see you guys on Good Morning America or the Today Show talking about this. That's
well, neither of us have a book, so I don't know if that's gonna happen. But no, you see, the thing is, neither Adele or I are really interested in self-promotion. I mean that in all honesty. We're both, you know, we both have a different perspective on things. I, because of my age, probably, you know, you've seen a lot of things. I actually joined Weston Price organization about 15 years ago when I felt so sad when I learned the information that I hadn't raised my kids from the preconception on that diet. It was a big moment of despair for me,
right.
and that motivated me to become a dietitian when I was 50, so I could help the other young women who didn't have access to this information. And I don't want to make myself sound up to be a saint or anything like that. I just wanted to say that there is a role for passing on this ancestral health knowledge, and it's up to the older people to do that because the younger people are so taken in with this vegan agenda now and clean eating, and it's like, well, you know, people think, oh, I eat plenty of fruits and vegetables, I must get all my nutrients. I'm like, oh my gosh,
no.
I wish I could undo this.
No, but for those of you who want more information, foraHealthyNation.org is where you can go to learn more about
and sign the letter.
Yeah, there you go, and sign the. I didn't even know there was a letter there, but you can sign the. I mean, this letter you're talking about, the open letter that you wrote. So
yeah,
if you get enough votes, you think that'll make a difference?
No, but what it means is that policy is good. I think you pointed this out earlier. Policy is going to be the last thing to change, but
yeah.
We can make that policy obsolete by spreading the word about what that policy does and does not do.
Adele Hite and Pamela Schoenfeld, I applaud you. You're welcome back on the show anytime you want to come on and talk about something that you're working on. Just let, Alex Leaf is the one who scheduled you. Keep his email. Send him an email. And you, like I said, you're welcome back on the show anytime. I love what you're doing. And you, while you're singing to this choir, we all believe already what you're talking about. This is discussion that has to happen over and over and over and over and over and over again until everybody gets it. And until then, we can't stop. Yeah.
We can free them from those dietary guidelines.
Yes. Get rid of the My Plate. Put Michelle Obama told children that a healthy snack is pizza. Now a study just showed that kids who eat pizza are sicker and fatter. I mean, it's like we should not be looking to government to teach us how to eat. Government, look at the people that are telling us how to eat. They're unhealthy. My father used to say...
I would argue that Michelle Obama looks pretty healthy, but I don't think she's an authority on nutrition.
That's what I... Thank you. But you know what? My father used to have a saying, don't go to a barber who doesn't have any hair. Because he doesn't care how your hair looks. He doesn't even have hair. And you know what? There's a lot of wisdom in the simplicity of that. But that's the way it is when you grow up in Brooklyn. You have to look at simple anecdotes to get through life. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
No, thank you so much for having me.
foraHealthyNation.org. Go check it out. And, of course, I also want to thank my other guest today, and that was Dr. Simone Gill for talking about arch height and its linkage to obesity-related walking limitations. That was also a great discussion. And thanks to you for listening to Superhuman Radio today. Carry the message forward. Share a show with somebody. And let's help change the world. We'll see you tomorrow.
Do you want freaking